Good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence Show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0 throughout the Waikato. Hope you guys are having a good day out there. And today, we're joined straight away by our guest on the telephone, the local MP for the King Country, Taranaki and Waikato, Barbara Kruger. How are you going, Barbara?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you. You hear me all right?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good.
You just hang that up. All right. So you're just telling me before you've been busy times.
Yeah, well, I've actually been at, this week I've been at the Oceania Summit that was up in Auckland, and it was based a lot of it around ag tech. And so really keen to see what was on the boil around, trying to get some of these methane reductions down. There's a few things people are working on, various forms of seaweed. There's some other products that, you know, additives that are starting to become available now that we might be able to feed to the cows. But we've got a wee way to go, because it's a bit of an issue to fix.
Yeah, I do remember reading somewhere, was it out of Italy or Spain or somewhere, that a macro algae or something, was it 5% of the cow's diet reduces methane by 90% or something like that?
Yeah, there's a seaweed called Asparagopsis. It's a form of a red seaweed, and apparently it's quite effective. So the thing will be, how fast can we grow it and how can we administer it will be the thing. And also with those sort of things, everyone's always checking the milk as well to make sure that, you know, there's no flavour and no taint and all of that sort of stuff. But but all in all, it's I think it's looking promising.
Well, that's great news. Yes. And I guess for people who don't know, Barbara, what portfolios are you the spokesperson for at present?
Agriculture, biosecurity, and food safety.
All right.
All quite connected portfolios, actually. And the agriculture one keeps me extremely busy. The biosecurity one, when we start talking about threats of foot and mouth disease and things like that, certainly start to come to light.
But, for sure.
But luckily we've managed to keep it out, and I hope we continue to keep it out, because what we don't want in New Zealand is foot and mouth, because it will become way worse than what mycoplasma bovis was, because that was really bad for farmers. It was a really tough time. It was hard watching all those cows go off, but it was never an issue with the meat, and it was never a trade issue, because there aren't other countries in the world, most of them already have M. bovis, so you know, we were the ones that were trying to eliminate it. Most other countries had it. But if we got foot and mouth, it would be a completely different picture, because we'd have to renegotiate our trade deals again, because we could no longer say we were foot and mouth free.
Yeah, and where is it at in Indonesia at the moment with that?
It is in Indonesia. Not so worried about, people are a little bit worried about things coming in on ships. I think MPI's got a pretty good handle on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, just worry more, and there's no direct flights from there into our country at the moment. But I, you know, we are quite vigilant at the border, and MPI is doing a lot of work at the border just to make sure. And I know it's a bit of a pain as a traveller when you're coming back through to have everything slowed down, but the risk is too great not to do that. So it made it to Australia, but it wasn't a live version of foot and mouth. It came into Australia in a piece of meat.
Right.
And but it was very benign. It was benign, so it wasn't actually live. So, you know, but as soon as it comes to your navy, you start to get a little bit panicky.
Yeah. I didn't actually hear about that one coming into Australia. Yes.
Yeah. So, but it was, yeah, as I say, it was benign. It didn't spread. It hasn't gone anywhere. So Australia doesn't have it. So that's always a bonus when your next door neighbour's okay.
Yeah, I've talked to a few people in Raglan here, and they've just been over to Bali, you know, having a holiday or doing whatever, and I guess that's high risk as well. People bring it back accidentally on their shoes or something like that.
That's the thing. So that's why we've got to be ever vigilant, and people that are travelling from destinations that we're concerned about are getting checked out more closely.
Yeah, all right. And the local governments, I suppose, have you had time to have a look at how everything's gone down in your constituency there? There's been big changes in the Waikato,
well,
I know.
We had a change in Waipa, probably put a shout out to Jim Milchrist, who's done a very good job for a long period of time. Susan O'Regan is now the mayor there, so that's That's been a change, and I'm sure Susan's been on the council. I'm sure she'll do a good job as well.
Yep.
We're still waiting, I think. I haven't checked just in the last 24 hours, but Otahonga was too close to call.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and there was a new mayor I've got, because I've got Ruapehu. They had a retirement there, so there's a new mayor over there. There's a new mayor in the Waikato, which covers your area.
Yes, yeah, Jackie Church got in there, yep.
Yep, then down in New Plymouth there was quite a challenge, but the mayor came through that one. So, yeah, largely similar people there, but we did have the change in Waipa, and we're just waiting on Otahonga.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Yeah, it's been appears to be all through the council and the Waikato district and regional councils. Quite a high turnover of people. Yeah, there's an appetite for change, obviously, out there. Mm.
Well, there is a bit of change out there, and I mean, some was chosen and some wasn't. But it's a bit of an interesting life being a local councillor, because you know, there's people that go, oh, I'd quite like to do that, but I don't know whether I want to put my head up. You people a little bit nervous, I think, in the days of Facebook and those sorts of things. You know, just a little bit of abuse goes on sometimes.
Oh, absolutely, there does.
And I think that makes people a bit nervous about putting their name forward as well.
Yeah. I think congratulations to everyone who has a go, for sure, because it's not easy putting yourself out there and doing that kind of thing.
No, absolutely.
And another thing I was just reading yesterday, was it? Yeah, I think it was yesterday. Here, Waki Ikenoa proposed split gas farm level emissions. It's supposed to be a world first. And they want to bring the pricing in from 2025. Have you had a chance to have a look at those ones?
Yeah, so that was the original model was one that the industry put together, and it started in 2019. A group of industry leaders got into a room, and they've been doing it for about 3 years now to try and actually get some sort of agreement on not just methane but nitrous oxide and how we deal with sequestration. And if you can imagine getting groups in the room, right from dairy and beef and lamb to horticulture, deer, a range of others, it's actually quite, to get agreement, there's always a bit of give and take. So
sure.
They delivered that to the government a couple of months ago. I think it was in early June. And the government's had a chance to now have a look and come back with some suggestions for change. It's fair to say there's a bit of noise out there at the moment around that suggestion for change, for two reasons. One of them is we could lose 20% of our beef and sheep farms under the current settings that are in place. So that's bringing a lot of contention. I think it's something like 5% for dairy. But beef and lamb are really under the pump at the moment on this.
Right.
And so we don't want to do that, because our farmers are the most climate efficient farmers in the world. And if we give up our food production and it goes somewhere offshore, it's likely that it's going to be growing at a worse climate profile. So therefore, we haven't gained much climate-wise. So finding solutions is still the best answer. Not having the settings, we've got to make sure the science is right and the settings are in the right place. And the other thing that people are disappointed about is they've come back and they've sort of not been overly abundant with options around sequestration. So I did notice this morning, you know, if you had someone on TV, I think it was the chair of Dairy and Veg, Jim Vanderpoel, talking about how you can class riparian strips of planting and put that into Hei Waka Ikenoa. But if you've planted a shelter belt over here, which may well be the same tree, they don't count. So there's a few anomalies like that, but it's a 6-week consultation.
Yep.
And I encourage people to get in and have their say, because, yep, we've got to measure and manage these things, but we've got to make sure we do it with the best science and the best modelling that we can, because otherwise we could take ourselves a long way down the wrong track, lose a lot of sheep and beef farmers, and then that's not going to solve our problem.
Yeah, we wouldn't want the red meat and the dairy sectors to end up like poor old pork industry, where, you know, they're getting legislated out of even existing pretty much, and we're getting, you know, all our bacon and pork bits and that mostly from overseas, where the you know, the standards are way lower and all that.
Pork's a difficult issue, really, because we don't export pork, we only import it.
Yeah.
And the problem with pork, and there's a petition in front of our committee at the moment, actually Primary Production Select Committee, is that if we expect our farmers to do things to a certain standard, but we don't expect the pork coming into the country to be farmed with the same high standard, then, you know, we need some sort of equivalency for our own pork producers, because, and sometimes we don't even know where it comes from. Because I've got a sample label in my office that basically says this bacon is made from pork, which could come from any one of, and it lists about 15 different countries.
yes. No,
so if you think about country of origin labelling, none of it makes sense, really. And I think a lot of it is to do with how things are packed and processed. They put that label on so that you don't have to have 15 different labels. You can put all the countries on the same label, but at the end of the day, it doesn't help us know where it comes from and how it's farmed.
Yeah, exactly right. And I wonder if those same agribusiness leaders you're talking about before, there's also been a memorandum of understanding signed between agribusiness leaders and the government around a Centre for Climate Action on Ag Emissions thing. Is that tied in at all with...
I'm just waiting to see what that's going to do.
Yeah.
It's been in the budget. There's a lot of work to do, obviously, in that space, but even talking to some of the people out there who are involved in research, look, the money's there in terms of the shape of what that will look like and what it actually does is still not that clear. I hope that it's not going to be used for more buildings, because we already have universities.
Yep.
I think it would be best spent on, you know, the capability of the people and any sort of plant and equipment that might be needed to do special projects. But I wouldn't like to see another big brand building built, because actually I don't think we need another one of those.
No, I wouldn't think so either. It's interesting. There's a lot of noise anyway around stuff happening in these kind of areas, but not much doing yet.
The big thing is that we really need to bring some of this stuff to fruition. So we need to really hone in on the things that are starting to work, like the red seaweeds and things that people are talking about, and going, well, how can we get enough of this, if that is the answer, and it's not the only one, there's a range of them, how can we get enough of this fast enough to start making a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. And another good thing I saw came out finally, probably 10 years late for my mind, but the National Policy Statement for Highly Productive Lands finally, there's something happening there.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be interesting just to see how councils react to that. It's sort of come out right at the time when councils are making the changeover as well. I think, we've all have issues with good food land being planted. But I think if you start from a blank piece of paper, because councils have been asked to sort of circle these areas and protect them, I've got to remember that we aren't starting from a place where nobody owns the land yet.
Mm.
So there's going to have to be a bit of negotiation around those places that they actually circle to see, you know, maybe there's some land swaps involved. I don't know. I mean, councils are going to have to manage it in a way that that works best for their individual council. So I think it's a good idea. I'm just sort of looking to see how it will develop and how it will work in practice.
Yeah, especially, you know, like we've just been talking about, a lot of new sort of council staff and that coming in, and then plus there's local government reform supposed to be coming up in the next couple of months or something, isn't it, as well?
RMA's been split into three.
Yes.
The three water things going on at the moment.
Yes.
The local government reform thing, there's a whole lot of stuff happening in that space. We still haven't got through the first RMA bill yet, and while everyone's debating three waters, we don't actually know quite what. We don't get to see or haven't seen yet what will be in the local government review. It would have been better, I think, to do that first and then decide what to do with the water and everything else. Because no denying that something, some places actually need quite a bit done with their water, but we're not sure that four entities is the right option for that either. Because what that does then is, you know, you ring up somebody on the end of a phone and you say, I've got a water problem, and they're going to go, well, where on earth is Raglan?
Yeah.
I mean, most people know where Raglan is, but, you know, some won't.
Someone like Onifiddle or something. It's like, where the hell's Onifiddle?
Imagine if you're in a place like Wongamomina or Mokau, the person on the end of the phone's, you know, just not going to have any idea where you are.
Mm. Yeah, something we talked about a number of times on the show, Barbara. It's like, yeah, centralisation of things isn't necessarily a good thing.
No, no, because the further you get away from the community, the harder it is for the communities to engage, and then we lose a lot of our, you know, rural health, rural... We're fairly well set up for schools in terms of numbers of schools around, but, you know, we could do with more primary healthcare services. You know, there's a range of things that actually disappear out of a community once you start centralising things, and it's really hard to build back. And I always believe if you put everything in the hands of the local community, then the people don't change all the time. When it's centralised, you know how you ring up and you ring up a department or ring up someone and you just think you've got onto the person that knows what they're doing, and they leave and someone else comes in and you've got to start again?
Yes.
You don't get that with local communities because the community is usually a lot more stable than you know, the centralised option.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And speaking of rural health there too, they had the first National Rural Health Conference, I think it was about a month ago, Hoiwata Tai Whenua, the Rural Health Network, had, I think it was down in Christchurch. Did you get along to that one?
I didn't get along to that one, but I have had some engagement with Hoiwata Tai Whenua. Look, I just think this, now that they've formed that partnership, there was lots of different groups working in the same room in terms of rural doctors and rural nurses and mental health, and now that they've formed into this organisation, you know, there's always in numbers the opportunity to be able to advocate much more strongly. And I think now that they've joined together and they're all in the same organisation, I can actually see rural health getting a bit of a boost. They launched in Parliament. I helped host that event, and lots of MPs turned up. It was a real buzz of a day.
Good.
So, yeah, hopefully they get a good ear when they... hopefully they get a good ear when they ask for something.
Yeah, no, because it was only... when was that? A few months ago now, maybe? That yeah, rural wasn't actually its own thing. But it was lobbied.
In the health bill.
Yes, yes, yes. And that got changed, I understand. Is that...
Yes.
So rural is its own thing.
Mm. Yeah, so we were all instrumental in trying to get the word rural put in there, but, you know, because rural, it's not that we're different people, it's just that there's a different delivery mechanism for the things that we have in rural to what there are in, you know, in urban. We're the same. We all want good health. We all want good education, good roads. My goodness, do we want good roads at the moment? We don't want as many potholes as we have.
Yeah.
We all want good water. We all want good connectivity. It's just delivered different out rurally to what it would be in Wellington, Auckland, Christchurch, Dunedin, and even Hamilton.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, so that's a good one. Good on you guys for doing that one.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's important. I mean, I'm here because of rural, so, you know, it's always important.
And the flippy floppy nature, I should say, of like the exotic pine forests and that, they're in, then they're out of the ETS. Where's that at now? Do you know?
At the moment, they're in the ETS. The ETS is still going, and there's quite a review going on in forestry because, well, there's two parts to the forestry. One is actually the production forestry that's harvested and done for trees, and the carbon forestry was the one that was concerning a lot of people in terms of pine trees getting put everywhere.
Yep.
There was a real concern about, and look, they are great sequesters, but there was a real concern that people were, the overseas investment rules were set differently for forestry than for other things, so that had to be put back to a level playing field. And I think the carbon forestry people are just worried about the spray and walk away. I mean, if people are going to be planting pine trees, it's good to know that the pest control's dealt with, that the fire risk, you know, that the fire setbacks, all of those sorts of things, just making sure that we're not creating ourselves more of a problem than we're solving.
Mm.
So there's papers out on that at the moment. There's a group of people that think that, or believe or are doing a bit of, you know, having a canopy of, say, exotics, and then growing natives up through that over time.
Yeah.
I understand it's a lot to do with how much seed stock's already in the ground, and natives are quite hard to establish on a large scale. So bit of work going on in that area at the moment. I hope they can solve it.
Yeah, yeah. And our old friend, the organic certification bill, was that still sitting on the table gathering dust, or has something finally happened on that one, Barbara?
It hasn't come back yet. We're still waiting.
Man, that's been months and months, that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, we were working on that when in the last Parliament, when last time I was on Primary Production Select Committee before the election, which was 2 years ago. Yeah. And I know they've been putting a lot of regulatory stuff together for it, but James Shaw's continuously asking when it's going to come back, and we haven't seen it yet.
What do you do, I suppose? Yeah. Keep on knocking on the door, I guess.
Keep on asking, right? The Ag Minister says ask the House Leader, and the House Leader says ask the Ag Minister, and, one day we'll see it again, but it would be good to get it through.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a lot of stuff going on, Barbara.
Yeah.
Busy you must be, trying to keep over all these things.
Well, I think it's hard for farmers to keep over all these things because, we talk about it all the time in our ventures and our work and where we are and when we're out and about meeting people. But, when you're busy calving and lambing and doing all the other things you need to do on the farm, it's pretty hard to keep up with all the information that's coming out.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of that, how's the spring been so far down on the farm in Taranaki anyways?
Oh, pretty good, actually. Look, there have been times when it's been a little bit wet, but I say that always with a bit of reservation because when I look at what happened in Nelson and Canterbury's had more flooding and some poor people on the west coast have basically, had three floods in a year and those sorts of things, a bit wet's really sort of got to be put in context. So, but largely it's been okay. It's going very well.
Very good. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, Barbara. I think we've got a thousand things to look into, but thank you again for your time coming on to the show, and really appreciate it. And good luck with all these things, and we will keep in touch. And if you do come regularly, make sure to let me know again too.
Absolutely. Well, I'll pop into the studio at some stage. I've just noticed everything's really opening up now, and people are, particularly since the removal of the mask and things like that. There's a lot of events starting to happen and people really are starting to get out and about in bigger groups than what we could do before, so it's good.
Yeah, no, it was, I think it was last weekend or maybe the weekend before the international rally was here in Raglan, and that was a great day. It was busy. Yeah, they had a big trucks thing, with big screen outside the pub, and there's people everywhere up and down the street, so that was a good sign that everyone's getting out, and it was great day.
No, it's always good. I would have liked to have been there myself, but I couldn't get there. I'm quite into that, just having a look at that rally, but it looked like it went well.
Yeah, no, it did go well. It was well run. They had, just on Wainui Road there, they had, the pits so everyone could go up close and watch the cars getting the tyres changed and everything. So, it was great. Yeah, good family day. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm. All right. Good. Very good. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Barbara, again. And, take care, and we'll chat again soon, no doubt.
Yep, good as gold. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. Cheers. Thanks. Bye.